Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One. Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, Jason Whitlock is going to join us in the first half. Always interesting conversation. We get into a lot of sports failures. We'll do that as well. First, speaking of Whitlock, I'll tell you about LifeLock. New Year's means resolutions. Most people have a hard time keeping. Here's one. It's easy to keep, and you'll be glad you did. Get LifeLock Identity Theft Protection. One out of every five Americans have been affected by identity theft. This new year, you could miss certain threats by just monitoring your credit and bank statements alone. LifeLock helps detect a wide range of identity threats, like your Social Security number for sale on the dark web. If they detect your information is being used in their network, they will send you an alert. You'll have access to a U.S.-based identity restoration specialist. If you become a victim, protect yourself with LifeLock. Right, Dawson?
No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but LifeLock is the one New Year's resolution that can help resolve identity theft. Save up to 25% off your first year at LifeLock.com with promo code Adam. It's 25% off at LifeLock.com, promo code Adam.
Just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from ACS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat cool stuff and booze. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut.
You heard Dick. A new year of Adam's Monthly Nut hath begun. We kick off 2021 with a bang, with products like a bottle of Promescent Delay Spray to keep you going all year long, a collapsible water bowl to cure feminine canine hydration syndrome anywhere it strikes, a Secret Santa gift, because let's be honest, we got Corolla gifts galore at the warehouse, and a digital download of the first three glorious years of the ACE Awards. The year of the devil is behind us. Get ready for an all-new year of Adam's Monthly Nut. From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guests today, Frank Stallone and Jason Whitlock. With Gina Grad on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, and Kyle Dunnigan drops by. And now, before last week, he definitely would have spelled sedition with an S-H-U-N. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. I don't get that joke. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on. You mandate you get it on now. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for telling a friend. We love that about you, right, Gina Grad?
That's right.
Handball, Brian.
Okay. Are you kidding me?
The great Santino Carolla.
Oh, it bears a strong resemblance to a young Frank and Sly Stallone.
The
documentary of which I watched yesterday. Lots of footage of them as youths, and I'm like, that is Sonny Carolla. I am looking at a young Sonny Carolla.
Yeah, I guess that's right. Well, we have
spitting.
Pull up the pic.
I woke up this morning to a nice text I got from an old friend that said, celebrating 10 years of sobriety, thanks for paying for rehab, which
That's
I completely
nice.
Forgot about.
Did you just reply saying quitter?
Hallmark doesn't have a card for that?
I do forget sometimes if I pay for stuff for people. I just forget everything, I guess. I try to dwell on the negative. So I was like, I paid for your rehab 10 years ago.
Wait a second. Is this someone who came to you to ask about that? Is this something you offered? Do you remember the circumstances of paying? Rehab can be very expensive.
Dear friend, old friend, had always struggled with drugs. And I think about 10 years ago, finally decided to make a real move. And probably came to me to ask if I could fund it for him, and which I evidently did. So
it was evidently nice of you.
Yeah, it's funny because when I talked to my nanny Olga some years ago when she was like looking at a new car and she's like, I'm thinking about selling my old car. And I said, how much did you pay for your old car? And she said, I don't know. You bought it for me. I thought, Jesus Christ, I got to write some of this shit down.
You know, in Judaism, there's a like a hierarchy of tzedakah, which is not kneel, but I like charity.
Mm-hmm.
And one that gets you toward the top of the leaderboard is, you know, doing for others, giving tzedakah and not asking for anything in return. That's your jam. You don't even remember you did it.
Yeah, you know, I think it falls in line with my lowish self-esteem. Also, people I don't like who've taken a bunch of stuff from me, I remember because I'm like, I did this and did that and did the other for this person, and this is how they repay me. Right. The people I do like, I don't really keep track of it because there doesn't need to be a narrative. Like, they are good people. They do
it's
appreciate
like a nuisance
it.
Fee.
Yeah. And, yeah, I guess I just forget most everything that happened, happened in the past. All right. So, that was nice. You probably didn't need to send it at 7:51 in the morning and wake me up with a text, but, either way.
You were hungover after all.
I know.
Fix Adam's do not disturb on his phone.
Yeah. I didn't have the heart to tell him I'd picked up where he'd left off.
Right.
So there was that. I also returned I showed up at work today to find both bathrooms, doors ajar, light on, fan running, which meant both had been destroyed. And I thought to myself, I had to use one or the other. So I was trying to kind of figure it out.
The pipes are groaning.
It's a weird, it's an interesting thing in that, when you walk into a bathroom at an airport, you think, I'm going to intentionally not try to imbibe anything that's in this bathroom. You know, I don't want to volitionally take it in. But when you're deciding which bathroom you should walk into, and both of them have been essentially are signaling to me that there's issues, then you have to walk in and actually take it in.
Yeah.
Like you have to weigh your options.
You have to, you know, let your nose know and walk in and actually attempt to figure out the damage in each one of those. So there was that.
Long story short, you walked to Home Depot.
I chose the one, the path of least resistance. I picked the one that seemed to be the best, and I went in there and used it. But I thought, you know, we have our bathroom etiquette thing here, and it's working pretty well. Today was kind of tough because they were both used and they're both in the same state when I showed up. But I think we can all agree that almost a decade into my bathroom etiquette demand or decree I made here, that it works pretty nicely. No, I would argue that nobody has walked in on anyone who's ever been on the pot here, or at least hasn't. Look, if you think about it this way, you have two bathrooms and you have, you know, 10 or 12 people floating around this place at any given time who all seem to have bowel related issues. So those Dawson's eating a burrito as we speak, by the way. So with that in mind, the incidence of people walking in on other people that were on the commode and or at least knocking on the door, trying the doorknob would be frequent. But if the rule is when the door is shut, someone is in there. And if you then leave, do not ever shut the door behind you because it's going to signal to other people that someone's in there when no one's in there. That is followed pretty rigorously around here. And so you never have that situation of waiting for the bathroom because you think someone's in there, but they're not because the door's closed. You never have the situation of someone walking in on someone who's in the bathroom. And it's been, I would call it a resounding success. Highly, highly successful. So
this is going to sound like shitting on your point, but I'm actually making your point. I have been walked, or I usually lock the door when I'm using the bathroom over there. I have many people here grab the door and try to open it. always a guest or their entourage. Always. The people who have somebody gotten the decree. Up. Yes, people have gotten the decree, have adopted it.
Considering
now is the best time, by the way, because the fewer people coming in and out of the studio.
Considering the fact that it is almost everyone's worst nightmare to either be on the pot or walk in on somebody on the pot. They're both equally terrifying. I don't think anyone, nobody wants to be the person on the pot, but equally no one wants to be the person to walk in while someone is on the commode. Given that, you wonder why these aren't more universally adapted. It's very simple. It is a door closed always means there's somebody in there. If the door's closed, somebody's inside of that bathroom. If the
you
door,
know why?
Yes.
Sorry, I was just thinking why this isn't. Well, first of all, people aren't as brilliant as you. Let's start there. Okay, next. The reason is because if people were to realize that they should have this conversation, most places do not have that sort of intelligence. Nobody wants to ask the follow-up question, which is the key to this whole thing, which is, what if it's tough stuff in there? What do we do? And that's when you do a jar with the fan. But I don't think people want to ask about that.
It is so ingrained.
They'd rather just close the door.
It is so ingrained in me. Like Maxipata, how many times you passed the door with the light on, a jar, you know, cracked a foot with the fan going and went, oh, I'm not going in there.
I do that all the time, actually, like this morning.
Yes, it's locked in. So door shut, someone in there 100% of the time, door wide open, free and clear to enter, and a jar with the fan on, enter at your own risk. It is foolproof. It works perfectly, and everyone should adopt this. Also, I woke up today, got a, didn't you have, Max Pat, didn't I tell you to take that article, I think, on Uppity from F1's website? Was that on your hit parade?
Yes.
So
Formula One yesterday, as we record this, they put up an article, just like Mashable did the top 20 Netflix documentaries. Formula One just released an article saying talking about 11 great F1 documentaries and films to watch during the off season, with Uppity being number two, right under Senna.
Ooh, what company?
That's nice, and not even really F1 centric. There's probably about 4 minutes, 5 minutes in there where Willie went to Spain, I believe, to attempt to get a ride in an F1 car. So nice.
And that just goes to show how much they wanted it on the list.
I think F1, we don't know it here, but the biggest sport in the world is soccer, and I think F1 may be second in the world. Nice to have that up on their website, so thanks for that, F1. Brandon is from Portland. He's driving across
the
country.
Hold on.
We're looking at young Sonny, young Sly, and young Frank Stallone. And
he looks more like a Stallone than Frank and Sly.
That's true. He's peak Stallone.
Yeah. I think his mom is a little nuttier than theirs. But either way, he could certainly go over there and lead a much better life than he's leading with us. That's for damn sure. Brandon, 38, from Portland, will put those pictures up on the website. Brandon's from Portland. He's driving across country. He's going to Florida with his kids. I've done everything, but I've never driven across country. And I always lived in California, and I felt like everyone drove across country to California. Everyone I know packed up their car in college or whatever and drove to the West. Number one. Number two, I never really had a car that was capable of making it cross country. And then by the time I did own a car that was capable of making it across country, I then could afford plane tickets and never thought about that. But I'd like to do that drive one of these days. Brandon, 38, Portland.
Yeah, hey there.
Yeah, hey, what's going on?
Well, thank you. I remember a few years ago, I think, you guys used to do a kid-friendly show on Wednesdays. So I don't know if that's still the case or not, but we are driving across country with my kids and trying to figure out what kid-friendly things we could listen to or try to pass the time.
How old are they?
9, 12, and 14.
Oh.
Tough range.
Yeah.
I would
not
look...
Not this fucking show.
How many days do you think you'll be in the car with them?
We're probably going to spread it out and probably take a week.
Hmm. Off the top of my head, Alex Jones does a quality podcast. I think that would help, you know, offer an alternative viewpoint to some of the stuff they're seeing on mainstream media. I would take this opportunity to expose them to good music, like the Beatles. You know what I mean? Like, it's funny. Kids are interesting. Like, we think that kids... you think that kids like kids' music. They want the Wiggles, or they want pop shit, or whatever it is they want. Like, you think they want it. But when you play them good stuff, they respond. Like, my...
You mean like a Max Zapata CD or something?
Sure, yeah.
Loxy, yeah.
Yeah, like, you take someone like the Beatles. The Beatles are will work with all ages. You think it's like, well, I wasn't born then, or I'm too young, or I'm too old, or whatever it is. You play them some Beatles, they'll get into the Beatles. The bands that have a high quality to them, everyone, I love the Jayhawks, and I'll always play the Jayhawks for people or hanging around or driving with or whatever, and they all universally come around to enjoy it. Like, when you play... You know, because music sort of operates on a level that kind of transcends your age or your education or your heritage or whatever it is. So I would definitely take it upon yourself to, like, expose them to some good music, unless you think the Beastie Boys are good, in which case you should definitely fly.
Skip it.
But
if you did the Beatles catalog, that's probably 10 or 11 hours of music. And it's also an interesting evolution, because you start off in the mop top, you know, I Want to Hold Your Hand. It's very accessible, especially for kids. And you transition into Sgt. Pepper, the White Album, Abbey Road. Like, it's a journey.
And then
by the time you get to Epcot, you're at Within You Without You.
And you pull out a couple of George Harrison singles. And
a little Traveling Wilburys.
Traveling Wilburys, some Paul McCartney, you know, solo Wings and solo stuff. And now you've rounded out nicely. Dawson wants to contribute.
If you really want to get into it, I got an audiobook called The Walrus Was Paul, The Great Beatle Death Clues, about the greatest hoax ever pulled in rock and roll, where they told you that Paul is dead. And there are clues all over the place. And it's a fun read, so if you really want to get into the Beatles and show your kids that you can't believe everything you hear in the news, check that audiobook out. And if you email me, Brandon, I have another audiobook by Buck Storm, a couple of them by Buck Storm. I will give you a free copy of The Miracle Man. It's a really good book. It's totally kid-friendly. It's an awesome story, and I'll just give it to you, so just shoot me an email.
Nice. Will do. I appreciate it. Those are gems. Thank you.
How long is this trip, did we figure out?
A week.
We're going to take a week.
And do you have all the places you're going to stop mapped out? Is it all mapped out?
Yes.
What kind of vehicle do you have?
We have a big Dodge truck, and then we're going to be pulling a trailer.
Wow.
Will you let people ride in the trailer while you tow it?
I would like to. I think that'd be a good way to separate the kids. I don't know if my wife would be down with that, though.
And
doesn't know.
The Dodge is a big crew cab thing, so they can just sit in the back there.
Right.
And you're pulling a trailer. So what are you doing? Are you relocating?
No, my kids race dirt bikes, and it's kind of closed down here in Portland because of Corona. So the tracks are shut down. So we're going to go to Florida and hit some of the tracks there and train for a few months.
We're driving to
Florida!
Let me say this. I'm profiling your wife. On one hand, she's in her 30s and she lives in Portland.
Long-suffering.
Yeah. So, no, I'm trying to figure out the likelihood of letting the kids make a run from inside the trailer, which would be an awesome, awesome experience for them. So on one hand, she's not down with that because of the danger standpoint. On the other hand, she's willing to pack it up and go to Florida so her kids can race motocross for an extended period of time.
Mm-hmm.
So you have someone who's open to the notion of danger.
She's a complicated woman.
Yeah.
But even she has her limits.
Is she freaked out about the kids riding motocross?
She is, yeah. She gets nervous, but she's cool with it. She understands that there's risks. And I mean, every time we go to the track, we always see a big wreck and someone gets hurt. But luckily, the kids haven't had any big problems yet.
What she's class cool. are they racing?
I've got one kid on a 65 in the 65 class, and the older two are in the 85 class.
Goddamn, cool dad, man. The dads, I mean, that's how you could kind of measure the cool dads when I was growing up. The guys who had the dirt bikes and who would take the kids out and go to the desert, let them go riding on the weekends. I used to do that. As a matter of fact, the only time I ever went dirt bike riding when I was young was with the guy I paid for rehab for. So maybe I owe it to him, because his dad would take us out, load up the truck, and take us out to the desert. And about the scariest thing I'd ever do is, after riding these dirt bikes in the desert for a couple hours, at some point the dad would pull up back to the camp. He'd have a cigarette dangling out of his mouth. He'd be sitting on the dirt bike and he'd go, "Hey, Ad," called me Ad. "Hey, Ad, jump on. And I'd be like, "Oh, Jesus Christ, it's the scariest thing in the world." The hairiest thing in the world is riding on the back of a dirt bike with a dude who's smoking a cigarette named Rick, who wants to go out there and have a good time. And you couldn't say no.
Oh, no.
But on the other hand, it was terrifying. And much like the pilots, like when you fly with the Blue Angels, they're not doing their job unless you throw up. You know what I mean? Like,
so show you a good time.
They got to scare you a little bit. No, otherwise, that's where the fun starts. So,
well, you do the same thing with your kids. I mean, you know it.
I do it, and it's true. Like, you are in control, and the person behind you isn't in control, or the person in the car isn't in control. And that little moment of bizarre ecstasy comes for, it's not when you're ramping up, you know, speeding up, and it's not when you're, you know, getting near the whoop-de-doos or the jump or the corner or whatever you are doing in the car or on the dirt bike. It's that one, it's like the millisecond where the person who's in control knows what's going on, and the person behind them or in the passenger seat is at the mercy of that mm-hmm. person. And that person who's in control knows I can let off the gas in 1 second or hit the brake in 1 second. But to the person, like, did you guys ever have that thing where you'd be driving with one of your goofball buddies in high school? Gina, this is probably a dude thing, but where they'd, okay. they'd get in the car, there'd be like a red light with traffic going across. They'd be 200 feet away and they'd floor it and they'd go, "Oh, there's no brakes. And you'd be like,
"Good times."
And then they'd just stop at the last second, or they'd be speeding. God forbid they got up on a mountain road or something. They'd be speeding right for the edge, you know, like, "I can't control it." And you'd be like, and then you're both experiencing the same thing. It's just one person has control. The other person doesn't have control. And it's that one millisecond right before they brake or right before they let off.
Yes. I know it's not nowhere near the same, but the closest I've gotten is with a stroller or a grocery cart. Oh, I can't catch up to it. And he's laughing. So that's as close as I've ever gotten.
Yeah,
and I'll never catch it. And he's
right into traffic.
Yeah, it's great. It's good stuff.
Right
into the milk aisle.
Push it ahead. Brian, did you have jack-off buddies in high school that did like crazy driving?
Yeah, kind of, yes. But actually, I want to tell this story because I've never told this story before. Speaking of harrowing experiences on these off-road vehicles, I don't think I've ever told you guys the story. It's never come up. But my grandparents retired to Lake Tahoe. So they lived there full time. And we'd go up and visit them several times a year, including snow season. They owned a snowmobile, and the whole family they'd take it out. They'd go to a meadow and take it out, just go all over the place. And one of the meadows had these big I would call them craters, but you know, I was 12 years old at the time, but they were big dips. You can go down and swirl around and come up. They were huge. You could ride around in them and come up. And I went out riding with my Uncle John. I'm on the back. I'm 12 years old. He's on the front. And he's like, oh, look at those cool dips, those craters over there. I'm like, yeah, we got to do one. So we're like, let's go to that one over there, where there was no one for a reason. We were zooming at top speed to this crater. We want to go down and
on the snowmobile.
On the snowmobile, cruising at top speed towards the dip, you know, where we see people in other dips around this giant field going down and around. Ours didn't dip. It fell off. And we literally went like right off the edge into a little creek, ravine, whatever you want to call it, a little like, you know, body of water that was maybe 6 inches deep. I blacked out. I was pulled out. I remember being pulled out from my back under the water, or at least, you know, the water up to my face.
Wow.
By my uncle, who was, you know, bleeding here. He wore glasses.
Oh my God.
His glasses were gone. He couldn't see. He's bleeding here. We both survived. I'm 12 years old, so keep in mind this is my recollection. It felt like an 8 to 10 foot drop. Could have been 6, but either way, that's off a speeding snowmobile. We hoofed it back to, you know, base camp where, you know, the grandparents were and everyone was. We were like, snowmobile's pretty effed up. We're okay, but we're going to have to go get that snowmobile. That was a life-altering experience for us.
You wrecked the snowmobile?
Upside down in a creek.
Your grandmother must have been more worried about that.
I don't remember what Grandma's reaction was, actually.
Very defending your life, if people remember.
Oh, yeah.
There's a real one of the pivotal parts
the
of that
snowmobile.
Show was the snowmobile accident. I have never been on a snowmobile.
It was fun until that day.
It's super fun.
I would love to be on a snowmobile, but I have never been on a snowmobile. All right. Let's see. Jason Whitlock. Just the fact that you knew someone who owned a family member that owned a snowmobile is pretty damn
cool. Destroyed it that day.
And your grandma wasn't pissed.
She wasn't there. She was in declining health at this point, and you know, was just at home doing whatever, watching movies or something. The rest of the family went out to the field that day. You have that family member who's just like, oh, go ahead, do whatever you're going to do. I'm going to stay home and watch my shows or whatever.
I love being that family member.
Yeah, that's me. That's what I do. Do whatever you want.
Best family member.
There you go.
Well, yeah, I do have a strong element of do whatever you want and figure it out. All right, let me hit Geico, then we'll talk to Jason Whitlock. Do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, and you want to make it easy? You can bundle your renters or homeowners insurance with your automotive policy, everybody. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save. It is easy at geico.com. Take the homeowners insurance, take the renters insurance, and go ahead and bundle them up with the automotive insurance at geico.com. Jason Whitlock is going to join us right after this.
And now, Alcoa presents Definitely Not a Jew on the Adam Carolla Show. Dateline, Tacoma, Washington. A 30-year-old woman was arrested at a motel with 7 pounds of methamphetamine stashed inside an accordion. Definitely not a Jew!
Well, we got Frank Stallone and Kyle Dunnigan joining us later because they both do a Killer Sly Stallone impersonation. I got some clips from the movie Cobra I've pulled up as well, so we can see who can get closer to mimicking Sly in his prime. Jason Whitlock is our guest. He's got a Twitter, Whitlock Jason, also can be found now on theblaze.com. Got an article online I saw him talking about on Tucker Carlson. I think it was last night. Maybe it was the night before. Also, definitely should talk some sports because he's a former ESPN writer and Fox Sports and AOL writer and a big Kansas City Chiefs fan. So we'll get into that. It's good to talk to you, Jason.
Good to be here, Adam. Thank you.
is are the Kansas City Chiefs, are they the odds-on favorite right now to win the Super Bowl, or is it Green Bay the favorite?
The Chiefs are the favorite. You gotta knock out the champs to be the champs, and it's great what Green Bay's doing, and Aaron Rodgers versus Patrick Mahomes would be a fantastic Super Bowl, but the Chiefs would be favored.
As a fan of the Chiefs, now they're going to be playing the Browns coming up on Sunday. I, as a Rams fan, if my team, well, I'll give you a perfect example. When the Rams lost to the Patriots in the Super Bowl 20 years ago, I thought to myself, well, I'm a Rams fan, but good for the Patriots. They've been to the Super Bowl a few times. They got their ass kicked by the Bears the last time they were here. I kind of like them growing up, and they've never won a Super Bowl, so good for them. I wanted the Rams to win, but good for them. Years later, when the Rams played the Patriots, I was like, fuck the Patriots. They've won enough. I don't want that team to win. Of course, they won both times. When you're playing the Cleveland Browns, obviously you're rooting for KC. But is there any solace if Cleveland wins to go, they're such a snake-bitten franchise, good for them?
I had no idea where you were going with that question, but you actually landed at a spot where I'm like, you know what? It actually would be kind of cool for the Browns to win in an upset and advance to the AFC championship. And so I guess I would, because Baker Mayfield is a guy I've had mixed feelings about, undersized guy, a bit cocky, but I kind of like him. He's certainly a competitor, and it would certainly be a good look for him. So I would feel halfway decent if the Browns won.
And as I look up at all the teams that are vying for the Super Bowl at this point, the Ravens and the Titans and Cleveland and Pittsburgh.
Titans are out.
Oh, sorry. I was looking at
Pittsburgh's
looking at,
out.
Looking at last week. Sorry, Max, but don't put last week's up there, goofball.
Okay.
Ravens are playing the Bills.
Yeah,
these,
sorry.
These four are the
yeah, sorry. The point is many of the teams that are up there either haven't won a Super Bowl or maybe have only won one Super Bowl in their franchise history.
Or tortured franchises like the Bills and the Browns.
Yeah, so it's going to be win-win because, like, you know, when the Steelers get to the Super Bowl or the Patriots get to the Super Bowl, I'm always kind of like, they've got enough. They've done enough. Most of the other teams haven't won one, or if they have, they've only won one. Yes, Brian.
Can I ask a question, especially Mr. Whitlock, but to everyone, especially Gina? If I was thinking about this when I was watching the Saints, and I'm like, okay, if you're a Saints fan, are you happy with the last 15 years? So, I mean, it sounds like a silly question, but you have a great franchise, a great coach, a Hall of Fame quarterback. You've milked one championship out of it. You're a perennial contender, so that's obviously good. But are you satisfied / happy with the results? Like, should they have not gotten more out of the Drew Brees, Sean Payton combination, which is, you know, Hall of Fame worthy?
They're not remotely satisfied, primarily because of what happened to them in the NFC Championship against the Rams, where they felt like the blown call cost them a chance at the Super Bowl.
It did.
But if not for that, I think they would be kind of relatively satisfied. They, as long as Drew Brees has been there, they've been competitive and in the hunt. But having had that Super Bowl appearance in their mind stolen from them, yeah, they're not satisfied. They've been on a revenge tour now. What is this, the third year trying to get that revenge?
Is speaking of Drew Brees, is he saying he's going to retire after this year, or are we speculating he's going to retire?
It's a combination of both. He has not said anything, but all indications are this is his final year, and that's what people are speculating.
And he's going to be going up against Tom Brady, combined age 147. But I like the idea that these guys at the ripe old age of 41, 42, I mean, they're
42 and 43.
42 and 43, still.
Yeah,
really,
I think Brees just turned 42.
Playing lights out ball, you know, and I don't think Brady's going anywhere soon. I've not heard of him going anywhere. On the other hand, if he wins the Super Bowl, it's improbable, but if he wins the Super Bowl, should he go out? Should he just go, I'm the greatest of all time. No one's ever going to do this again. Point. Right.
I'm tired of predicting when Brady should go out. Clearly, he goes to his own drum. And so I've been saying he should have went out last time the Patriots won the Super Bowl. I'm not going to say that anymore. Clearly, he has a passion for football. His wife is allowing him to continue that passion for as long as he wants. Good for him. He gets to wear the pants in his house. That's kind of new territory for 2021.
of course, I'll be rooting for my Rams against Green Bay. It's kind of tough because the Rams have this habit of playing shitty with shitty teams, a.k.a. Getting beat by the Jets a few weeks ago. They sort of step it up against good competition. But I don't know what the spread of that game is. It's got to be 4.5 or 5, right?
6.5.
6.5.
Yeah, it's got to be a touchdown. Derek Goff's so shitty that, it's not – they don't have a chance against the Packers.
Do you mean in his current state with injuries, or do you not think much of Jared Goff as a
– No, I've never thought much of Jared Goff. I've always thought – that he was overvalued. They overreacted to the Super Bowl appearance. Sean McVay's ego got involved. I created this guy. Let's pay him, and I can get this out of anybody. He's just not that good.
Is it going to be snowing in Green Bay? I was trying to figure that out, which I love a snow game. It's visually so damn compelling.
Adam, just because I look like the old school Al Roker doesn't mean I'm a weatherman.
Well, you and Gina will be rooting on the Chiefs.
That's right.
This weekend.
It says 33 degrees on Saturday, sunny, but the previous 2 days are snow, so there could be some residual snow in the field.
Shouldn't we always just assume it's snowing in Green Bay, even if it's August? It's probably snowing in Green Bay.
It'd be nice. So, Jason, let's talk about you, former offensive lineman for Ball State, Division I school.
Back ranked number 23
in
the country this year. Yeah, just final AP poll. Yeah, we won our conference and our bowl game.
was there thoughts about turning pro for you?
No. There was thoughts about apple turnovers. I was a decent – I started and played, but I was not an NFL caliber player, no.
Did you know it, or did someone have to tell you?
No, I knew it. I'm just a shade over 6 feet tall, and, I needed to be 6'2" to be an offensive lineman in the NFL.
Did you play – you must have played defense in high school, because if you're big and you're a good athlete, you'll just play on both sides of the ball.
I went to a powerhouse high school that, had 4,000 students, and we were nationally ranked. No one played both ways.
Oh, really? Wow. What high school did you go to?
Occasionally I would in key games, but for the most part, no. It's Warren Central High School in Indianapolis. We won the first one in 1984. We've won 9 state titles since then, and generally turn out 2 to 3 Division I prospects every year. Big time players, pros. We generally have a guy or two in the pros at all time.
Not the same as my high school.
Who would be the names we would know from that high school who went on to the pros? And
the best player we have right now is a guy at Purdue that's a wide receiver that'll be a first team All American next year. He was first team All Big Ten this year. Receiver named David Bell. We had a defensive tackle, Sheldon Day. It played on San Francisco's Super Bowl team last year. Was on the Colts this year. Trying to think of who are obviously our best NFL, most well-known NFL players. Quarterback I played with, Jeff George.
Oh, you played with Jeff George?
Yeah, we grew up together.
Comes up on the show a lot, actually.
How big was his arm back in high school? I mean, did he have a cannon in high school?
Adam, I can say this in all seriousness. In like fifth grade, we said he'll be the first pick in the NFL draft. His arm was that good as a fifth and sixth grade.
So do you guys say you won the state championship with him at quarterback?
Yeah. And finished number 9 in the country.
I'm trying to think.
He was good in high school. Awesome.
Imagine so.
And, yeah, imagine you did all
and
right.
There's been nobody in the NFL with a better arm. John Elway, just as good. Dan Marino, just as good. No one better.
I'm trying to think out of all the Pop Warner years I played and high school years I played. I'm trying to think. I may have gotten more out of losing than I got out of winning. I played on some good teams and I played on some shitty teams. There's a lot to get from losing. I played 7 years of Pop Warner football. I went to 2 championships each time, supremely confident we would win the game, lost each game. And but I think I got a lot out of it. I don't know. You must have played peewee football, Jason.
I would analogize it more to my college experience. In high school and in junior high, played on very good teams. In college, in 1988, we played for the MAC championship at Ball State Stadium. I played very poorly against a guy named Joel Smingy that went on to have a long NFL career. And that loss has haunted me. That's 1988. How many years? Is that 35 years or however long it's been? Yeah. 32 years since. I still think about that game. I still think about, you know, how I drank too much beer and ate too much pizza. Wasn't really properly prepared as a college athlete because I just wasn't mature enough. And so I did learn a lot from that loss because that loss has haunted me.
Yeah, the thing about football, if you play an interior line position, especially if you're an offensive lineman, were you a guard?
Yeah. Guard, then also a tackle.
You can get whipped by the guy in front of you, and the same guy will usually be in front of you for the entire game, and it'll be pretty evident who got the best of who in that. And it's weird. You never forget that. I remember I played guard in high school, but I played linebacker as well. But my very distinct memory is our team sucked. We're playing Canoga Park, who was good. They had this all-league defensive lineman. His name was Ono Zwanfeld.
And,
Oh, no.
Zwanfeld? I don't know what culture this child hails from.
Ono Zwanfeld was like
a Bond villain.
Yeah, he's like a Bond villain. He's just a huge, big white guy. And Ono Zwanfeld, I think, went on to be recruited and play at UCLA. And he was like all city and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, our team sucks. Their team's heading to the championship. I got this guy, Ono Zwanfeld, in front of me the whole game. And I said, even though our team's going to lose, I'm not going to lose this battle against Ono Zwanfeld, even though the guy was a big dude and heading for UCLA. And we got down around the goal line and we ran like a dive play. And I wasn't able to get Ono out of there. And I went back to the huddle. And I thought, nobody beats me. I will root him out of there. I will fire off of this ball, and I will punch Ono Zwanfeld back into the end zone. And I don't care if we score or not. I'm taking care of Ono Zwanfeld on this play. And I got my three-point stance, and I fired out, and Ono went nowhere. And I've never forgotten about it.
It's comical, those memories and how they stick with us. In high school, I was a very good player. I gave up 1 sack in my career. A guy named Chris Keevers, I can see the sack right now in my head, how he beat me. He went on to play at Purdue. He's a coach now in college football. I followed his – just because of that 1 sack, I followed the rest of his life.
I was literally – as I was talking about getting beat by Ono Zwanfeld, I was hearkening back to the last game I ever played as a junior in high school, where we were playing like Monroe High School. They'd gone up like 28-0 on us. and we went back to the locker room. It was the last game of the year. We sucked. And Fred Nielsen, our head coach, just looked at everyone and he said, we're not going to win this game. And and everyone agreed with him except for Michael Odom, a running back who got pissed off. And Michael Odom stood up and he said, we are going to win this goddamn game. And he like stormed out of the locker room. And then we came back in the second half, led in big part by Michael Odom, who made all these great plays. And we kind of scratched our way back into the game just to make it respectable. I don't think we're going to win the game. But my quarterback, who was a senior, Mike McGreecy, on the very last play of the game, he dropped back and I gave up a sack to Mike. And I've never forgot that either. Like Mike's last time he touched a ball as a player, my guy sacked him. And I didn't give up many sacks either. And I was obviously still haunted to this day about it.
But I'm not trying to like one up you. I'm just sharing as you bring
a
back memories.
Fuck up. Go ahead.
Yeah. But the Joel Smingy guy that destroyed me in 1988, in 1987, at Western Michigan, I forgot the snap count. He beats me off the ball and he sacks our quarterback, Wade Kozakowski, and ended Wade Kozakowski's career. He injured his shoulder and on the sack, and that was the end of Wade Kozakowski. I was personally responsible for ending our quarterback's career in 1987. That's something you'll never forget.
I killed a referee in 1981. Your
that.
Turn. Go ahead. I went into the stands and attacked a special needs child who was wearing the jersey of the other team.
I was in Brentwood the night Nicole. No.
Oh my God. Jesus. You're about to win.
Hey, Chris, you ever find out what happened to Ono Zwanfeld?
No. I'm trying to find him in your yearbook. See,
he didn't play on my team.
I'm looking up his name just any way I could.
But you won't find him in my yearbook because we weren't. I was playing Canoga Park.
No, then I haven't found him yet.
Yeah. Don't ever look in my yearbook for a guy who whooped
me. Okay,
I
missed that part.
he was on my all-league. He was on my all-league roster or something like that. I think he was in there. But anyway, so I guess you learn more from losing, right? Because I really don't remember almost any of the victories, that's for sure. I do remember the times I screwed up.
That is fun. I don't, you know, it's like winning the state championship in high school. I don't have as vivid of memories of that as of the poor moments I had in college or even, you know, because we had a good team in 1988 in college. And I don't have vivid memories of the victories then either. It's the losses. That's interesting. I hadn't thought about that.
But maybe that's a internalization wiring you have, and maybe that's why you've been able to go out and have success, you know, beyond your playing days. Ono's the executive vice president at CBRE, which is a real estate company.
It could be a different Ono Zwanfeld.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's kind of a, yeah, there's Ono.
It works with Garrick's. It works downtown, Park Street.
Ono Zwanfeld.
I gotta see Ono.
Yeah, probably had a lot of personal momentum from kicking my ass and parlayed that into a cushy executive vice president gig. Yeah, so let's
executive vice president.
Oh, sorry. Let's think about that subject for a minute, which is I do clearly remember all the fuck ups and getting beat and. You know, I remember all that stuff and maybe not relishing the victories too much and spending a little more time reflecting. Maybe that is a quality that helps you kind of overachieve in your adult life. Maybe it puts a little fire in your belly. You know, I don't know. Jason, is any of this making sense?
I certainly spend a lot of time thinking about I don't want to fail. Mm-hmm. And because I don't know, failure leaves a mark. And I don't want any more marks on me. And because literally, I do, and I'm sitting here thinking about sports. I spend more time thinking about Joel Smingy than any other opponent, and just the failure of not winning that championship. And so, you know, maybe I wouldn't call it fear of failure, because I'm certainly a risk taker, and I don't mind failing because I know I'll just get back up and try something else again. But I do try to take every precaution so that I don't fail. And I sit around and think about, like, why I'm a bit of a teetotaler, and so I don't really drink. And most it has to do with I reached the early in my career. I was like, hey, man, to be the best sports columnist I can be, I can't be hungover. I don't want to be sluggish when I start the day. So I don't drink that often. I used to drink like a sailor in college. But once I entered the professional world, I kind of just cut it out of my life and, you know, maybe drink 10, 12 times a year.
Well, let's not hang out, number one. I don't want to be judged. But number two, how about this analogy for everybody? As it pertains to this theme we're talking about. I feel like people who work out real hard and are very much sort of look after their physicality and their aesthetic, like what they look like in a bathing suit. I feel like those people spend more time in the mirror thinking about losing 5 pounds than people that should lose 50 pounds spend time in the mirror wanting, Jason, this isn't directed at you, but
yes, it
people
is.
Who That's should fine. Lose 50 pounds spend like critiquing themselves. You know what I'm saying? And maybe there's some connection there. Maybe it's that fire that they sort of keep after, you know, they keep under themselves. Maybe that's what that creates. I don't know, but I think if I had a wish for my kids, I would hope that they focus, not obsess, but focus on the losses and not sit and just constantly relive and celebrate the victories.
Hmm.
Well,
coaches always tell you 24 hours to enjoy the victory, and then we move on to something else. Well, and that's probably a good philosophy.
Your high school won the state championship, and you don't think about it nearly as much as, you know, getting beat by that tackle, right?
No question about it. I have very few, and it was a you know, our high school state championship was televised across the state. We played in the brand new at that time Hoosier Dome where the Colts played, and it's hard for me to remember a single play from that game. And I've watched the game on tape, and the announcers talk about me because, you know, I was a well-known player, but I don't remember any of it. But boy, oh boy, those damn losses in college. And even when I go back to high school the year before, I screwed up in a playoff game the year before we won a state championship. I forgot my assignment. I can sit here and think about it. And, you're on to something here, because the memories of the failures are really vivid.
I had
the success, just not.
I have one more potential failure story, and then we can talk about current events. I was we're at a very rare place when I was playing in high school where we were winning the game, and there was about 2 minutes left in the game, and we had the ball, and it seemed pretty apparent we were going to win this game. I think we're up by a touchdown, and I was blocking, and I got called for holding, and then I protested so much to my holding call that I got an unsportsmanlike as well, and the combined yardage on the holding call and then the 15 for the unsportsmanlike set us back to the point where our punter was standing in the end zone when it came time to punt the ball with a minute and a half left. And I was the long snapper, and it started raining. and it was dark in our end zone. It was a night game, and I was staring between my legs, and I'd played the entire game on offense and on defense, and it started raining, and I could feel it like on my hands as I got over the ball, and I was tired and everything, and I thought to myself, I just got a holding call. I just got an unsportsmanlike call. Now our punter's in the end zone, and if I F up this snap, I'm going to like single-handedly lose the game for this team. Fortunately, I didn't, but unfortunately, maybe now I wish I did, so I'd be even more successful now. Jason, let's talk politics. Let's talk about climate. Let's talk about where we're at. You recently just published an article I saw you heard you talking about on I think it was Tucker. Were you on Tucker last night? Was it the night before? I can't recall.
It's Friday.
On Friday. Oh, yeah. You know what it is? I did watch Fridays, but I watched it last night. It was in my queue. So for you, first off, being a black athlete and then a black sports writer and being at least perceived as conservative, how has that affected your standing in the community?
It depends on which community you're talking about. The social media community controlled by the blue check mark crowd, and the sports media community, it's probably affected my standing in a negative fashion. It's funny. People will say like, oh, you sold out. You're just saying that to make money. And actually, it's like, people, do you understand the business? All the money's on the other side. Everybody's getting paid to espouse liberal opinions about the sports world. That's where most of the jobs are. And there's so much heat and backlash and hostility for people that have my kind of traditional opinions and values that executives aren't willing to take that heat. So, it's made me a bit of an outsider in the sports media world, but I was never an insider in the sports media world. I wasn't trying to be friends with everybody in the media. That wasn't important to me. I got a group of athletes and guys I grew up with or played college ball with that are my friends. I got family that I'm friends with. I never went into a press box. Now, again, I wasn't hostile to people, and I certainly have some friends in the media, but I could care less if everybody in the press box is a fan of mine or a friend. And then, so if you're talking beyond the media, so much of the black community has been convinced that blackness is determined by your political point of view. And so many people believe that liberal is a black point of view. That it has created some tension that generally, 5 years ago or 10 years ago wasn't there. You could kind of think what you wanted years ago, and no one really cared. Is, were you a good person? You share religious views? Did you like sports? Things like that. But, being 100% authentic and transparent with you, Adam, my mother is a hardcore Democrat, MSNBC, CNN groupie. And this current environment has put tension between me and my mother. And it's almost comical because, and I don't say this disrespectfully, but, my mother is completely dependent upon me. Complete house, car, allowance, everything. But she's bothered by me not going along with the group think. And, that's just me being completely honest. And it's just, our relationship isn't as warm and fuzzy as all the time as the way it used to be, or the way that I think it should be.
Well, you brought up, people calling you a sellout. And there's one thing I think people should be intellectually honest about, whether you agree or disagree with Jason Whitlock or Scott Baio. You don't
take the two titans of sports.
No, you going against whatever LeBron James has to say doesn't get you paid. it actually takes money out of your pocket. The reality is if anyone is a sellout, it's LeBron James. It's not Jason Whitlock. It's everyone who's beating that drum. Now, I'm not saying they don't believe it, but the notion that one group profits from it and the other group oftentimes loses their job, the idea that you wouldn't call the group that fucking profits from it and all the Black Lives Matter and all that shit with LeBron James, you would then find the person that doesn't profit from him and call that person a sellout, that's patently insane. They can say they disagree all day long, that's fine, but this notion of like, you've sold out, like, you go on Fox News, you've sold out, and Fox News doesn't pay you, but if you do go on Fox News, you're not welcome on other shows. So if you have a book to promote or a podcast to promote or something to promote, you shall not. So it'll definitely hurt you financially to express those kinds of opinions. It would be the opposite of a sellout.
That's what's so unbelievable about the time that we live in, is that so many things that are taken as fact are actually completely untrue. And it's like the opposite is actually true. And so I say this all the time and it pisses people off, but I'm like, hey man, I really think we need to ask ourselves, are the liberals not the racists? They keep calling conservatives racist, but I keep finding blatant examples of liberals exhibiting racist behavior, saying racist things, and no one ever calls them racist. And it's like, you know what? I can test this out here because I've been thinking it privately. Like, I wonder how I can express this. And in this show, I can take this chance, I think. Liberalism is like a condom. And you can spew all the racism you want into this condom and somehow you're protected from it. And I've never seen anything like this liberal label that allows you to do virtually anything without anybody passing judgment on you. It can be the most heinous, most racist, most anything, but it's liberal and that person's a liberal. So look the other way. Nothing happened here.
Well, I think with racism, the first person that accuses the other person of being a racist gets some sort of impunity. And I feel like if you're, and I always make a kind of distinction.
Immunity? You think immunity or impunity?
Oh, sorry. Immunity. If I said impunity, yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Immunity is what I mean, which is there's sort of two people in an elevator and the first guy to accuse the other guy of farting gets away with it. And
well, in fact, it's he who smelt it dealt it.
That's
everybody
right.
Knows
we all
that.
Know this.
And I may have cut the cheese, but you licked the knife, baby.
These are immutable laws.
Yeah, so I think as long as you're sort of on the offense calling everyone a racist, the people you're calling a racist spend so much time denying they're racist, they never actually call you a racist. Although I do make a distinction between liberal and left, because I think of myself as liberal, but I do not think of myself as left. I think of myself as liberal in many facets of the definition. Whitlock, quick, yes.
I just want to say, Jason, if you're going to expand on this idea of the condom, perhaps maybe consider calling it a contextually transmitted disease.
Yes.
You can have that.
Thank you.
Jason Whitlock. Sorry, I got Stallone waiting online, so I gotta hop here. You can check him out at Whitlock Jason. You shoot him a tweet. Also, you can read his columns available now on theblaze.com. Good to see you, Jason, as usual.
Thank you, Adam.
Appreciate it. All right, yep. Take a break. We'll be back with Frank Stallone. First, a word from KFC. Hey, let's talk about something I love. Oh, best part of my childhood, KFC. Feed the whole crew with KFC. I got a beautiful bucket of chicken, crispy, delicious. I am traditional. I like the original recipe, and I love that bucket it comes in. And when I was young, I used to head down to see my Uncle Vince in Santa Monica. And we'd always buy a bucket of KFC, and it was such a treat. Again, It's the best part of my youth. Now it's the best part of my adulthood because I will go on a KFC run for my workers all the time. Home cooked meal, you didn't have to cook. That's what they like to say. KFC sides, by the way. Mashed potatoes, great. Gravy, and of course, my beloved KFC coleslaw. Hey, when people ruin coleslaw with raisins and curry paste and all that crap, this is old school coleslaw. They keep it simple. Close your eyes and pretend you're pulling the lid off of that bucket right now. Smell that? That's KFC, baby. Hey, Geico, do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know, it's hard work out there. Owning, renting. You want to save some money? How about you bundle? Bundle your policies at Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com.
Hey, movie lovers, who needs a theater when you have Pluto TV? Grab your popcorn and your streaming device because free movies are here. Pluto TV is your home for movies. Great movies are playing anytime in over 20 exclusive movie channels of action, horror, rom-coms, and more. Watch hits like Saving Private Ryan, Pretty in Pink, and Charlie's Angels all for free. No signups, no fees, no contracts. Ever. Download the free Pluto TV app on any device.